mutagen that was injected into our blood began to change us in miraculous ways. I saw how your father loved you, and I knew I had to show that same love to the turtles. I became their father, and they became my sons.
Welcome to another episode of the Turtle Dojo, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is a new member of the podcasting team, Chris Harrelson. Chris, how's it going?
Oh, Adam, I'm doing really well, man. Thanks so much for inviting me to join the team on this specific podcast. I'm super stoked to get going.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. We know you're from talking to you off air, if you will. I know you're a big fan of the Turtles, but you're also a big DC fan. I don't know where your Marvel interest is, but I'm sure we can, we'll discover that over the coming weeks and months. We look forward to definitely talking Turtles, TV, movies, comics, etc. With you. And we also look forward to hopefully having you on as a guest, like I said, to some of the DC-related podcasts as well. But since we're here to talk the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, let's do that. Before we get into the main portion of the episode, which will be our reviews of episodes 3, 4, and 5 of the classic 1987 animated series, I want to get into a little bit of your Ninja Turtles background. So, with that being said, my first question for you, sir, is... when were you first exposed to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Well, I very distinctly remember the commercials for the animated series before it began airing. Where I live in Atlanta, it's where I've been my whole life, and the show used to air on WATL 36, and I remember watching other cartoons on that channel and seeing ads for a new show called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I was like, that is an awesome name. This animation looks great and I can't wait for it. So I was there from literally day one. I watched the premiere episode when it aired and I've been a fan ever since.
Perfect. So really your first experience definitely was a cartoon. Now, in terms of the characters from the cartoon when you were growing up, and maybe it's changed now, maybe it hasn't, but as a kid, I'll ask it in two parts. As a kid, who was your favorite turtle? And now, who was your favorite turtle?
As a kid, Michelangelo was my favorite. I think a lot of kids were Mikey fans. He was funny. He was kind of more of the goofball, and he had all the fun phrases, like he was the cowabunga guy, you know. As I've grown older, I really like Raphael more. I like his kind of sarcastic attitude. So it was fun going back and rewatching these episodes and seeing how my viewpoint had changed. I still love Mikey. I mean, I love all the guys, but right. Raph is my favorite for sure.
Okay, cool. As you probably remember from episode one, I think mine is a toss-up between Raphael and Leonardo. I like all four, but those are my two. And really, it depends on my mood. So, it could change depending on what frame of reference I'm in at any given time. But So we've kind of covered the cartoons a bit. So let's move into, there have been several live action. Actually, before I get to live action, there have been several iterations of the animated series. There was the original, there was the 2003 reboot, then there was the 2012, which was the 3D kind of CG animation one.
Right.
And then there was there's the most recent one, Rise of the TMNT. So of these various animated versions, which one is your personal favorite?
Oh, man, I still got to go with the classic. I mean, I do enjoy all the series, but, you know, the classic 87 series is when my fandom began, and I had all of the action figures. I mean, I remember one Christmas was the big Ninja Turtles Christmas when I got all four of the Turtles, Splinter, Shredder, Bebop, Rocksteady. I got the Turtle Van and the Turtle Blimp. So just the memories and the nostalgia that's attached with the original series, it's still my favorite. And I still love the animation. I think it even holds up today.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. The animation is great. And again, as you probably heard in our first episode, because you see, the good thing about Chris, and not only a good thing, but one of the good things that I'm happy about is that he's a listener to the show. And sometimes when you listen to the show, you get invited to be a co-host. So,
right.
I don't know if that's a benefit or a detriment. Chris, I'll have to tell you after a couple episodes to let you know. But one of the things Chris will have undoubtedly heard is that I went on a quasi kind of little mini rant, not a major rant, about how the animation of my childhood, at least in my opinion, is a little bit more enjoyable to look at, and that's me being nice, than the current animation that some kids' shows have.
Yeah, man, I'm still, you know, all these years later, I'm still just more of a fan of the hand-drawn animation than a lot of the CGI or 3D animation styles that have come since then. It's just, for me, it's hard to beat that hand-drawn.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so we've kind of done a quick touch on your animation, where you stand animated-wise. So film-wise, there have been, if my math is correct, six adaptations of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for film, big screen. And that is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1, 2, and 3, which was by from New Line. And then we had the animated film, which I believe was 2007.
Yeah, the TMNT film.
Yeah, which was kind of sort of a sequel, or kind of sort of set in that world. It was basically the Superman Returns of the TMNT, in my opinion.
Right.
Of the franchise, where it was a quasi sequel. It was a, and I'll never forget these famous words by Bryan Singer, or infamous, depending on how you look at them. It was the requel, part reboot, part sequel. And then we had two newer live-action films produced by Michael Bay and Nickelodeon. So of those six films, which is your favorite?
Well, while I enjoy all six of the films, you know, I'm not one of those guys who says the new ones stink because I like the old ones better. Like, yeah, there's something to enjoy in all of them. But, man, you can't beat the original from 1990, man. I remember seeing it in the theater, and I remember being surprised when the New Line Cinema logo showed up, because even as a kid, my only experience with New Line Cinema was that they produced the Nightmare on Elm Street films. And I remember sitting in the theater and thinking, what? The same people that made Freddy are making the Ninja Turtles? And it was, I want to say, it was a little bit darker, obviously, than the cartoon series, but it was more real, and it had that kind of gritty New York feel to it. And in the past month, you know, my kids are home because of coronavirus, just like everyone's kids are. My son has discovered some Ninja Turtles films on the Amazon Fire Stick. So with him, I've watched the first two films from the original series and the most recent two films. And number one still holds up for me, man, 1990.
Yeah, I can't. First of all, I agree with you, and even if I didn't, I can't argue that because it still holds up, and it's just a good film. It's just a fun film, and like you said, it's a little darker, but it's more in keeping with the original comics of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which we kind of discussed in the first episode. And Chris and I will go, will continue going through that that series, and hopefully through all the series of comic iterations of TMNT. So look forward to that. And there's actually one coming out, supposedly, if everything, you know, goes well and comic books get back up and running publishing, which I know they are, hopefully in a safe manner. But this summer we're supposed to get a story called The Last Ronin, which is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles story that is going to be written by the original creators, Eastman and Laird. And this was something they had intended to do back when they first created the comic, and they sort of came up with this idea, and it was basically a look into the Turtles' future, and you know, because the comic was created in the year that it was, the future time period was set to be 20 years later, so the future in that book was supposed to be 2017. But because, you know, the idea of sat in a desk for, you know, a couple decades, they've gone back and tweaked it. So now it's going to be in the 2040s. So, and from, I think Entertainment Weekly did a piece on it, and basically just from the vibe I'm getting from the description and from the artwork, it's kind of like the equivalent of the Dark Knight Returns for Batman, but for the Ninja Turtles. It reminds me of Dark Knight Returns meets Mad Max meets the Ninja Turtles. So I'm intrigued by it, and I'm looking forward to reading that. So hopefully we'll be able to cover that here when that comes out. I know it's slated for a summer release, but beyond that, we're not sure. My guess is probably August would be my guess, but
A new Kevin Eastman Ninja Turtles story. Well, maybe not new, but new to us. Oh, yeah, well, man, sign me up.
The cool thing is he's co-writing or co-plotting the current run by IDW, which is fantastic. And if you know, we'll be going through that lengthy run as well down the road. But I'm really intrigued because it's the first time Eastman and Laird are together again, writing something. So that is really, you know, that pairing is really intriguing to me. So, and like I said, I love The Dark Knight Returns, the comic, and the animated movie, not necessarily the quasi version we got in BVS, but that's a different podcast. I love The Dark Knight Returns. So that kind of concept applied to the Turtles is like, just take my money and run. Give me the book, take my money and run. So we'll be looking into that, but that's probably going to be in August, so we've got some time to spare, and in that meantime, we're going to continue going through the wonderful 1987 animated series. So we are picking up with episodes 3, 4, and 5, which comprise the first season. The first season, for whatever reason, was a shortened kind of mini series that then evolved into seasons 2 through however many seasons it ran. And so we are going to finish off season one in that respect tonight. So episode 3 is described as follows. It is called A Thing About Rats, and it is basically described as follows. The Shredder hires scientist Baxter Stockman because his invention, rat-seeking robots named Mausers, can help him find Splinter. After an initial Mauser attack, the Turtles and Splinter go to hide in April's apartment. So, Chris, you watched the episode. What are some of your thoughts of this particular episode?
I do vividly remember watching this as a kid and being noticing the fact that it, at the time, it was one of the very few serialized cartoons. You know, a lot of cartoons in the 80s and even today, I would assume, are sort of self-contained, but this episode began with Splinter resting and recovering from the previous episode. And I remember watching that as a kid and thinking, wow, they're continuing the same, they're telling one story throughout these episodes. They're not individual episodes that are set apart from all the rest of them. So that was something that really caught my attention as a kid. And rewatching it, I was like, wow, man, I remember this feeling. Because, you know, the Turtles had rescued Splinter in episode 2, and that's how this one begins, with him resting and recovering. This was our initial introduction to Baxter Stockman, who obviously would go on to play a bigger role in later seasons down the road. And I think, was this the first time that Mikey said cowabunga? I feel like it was, because I rewatched...
It might have been, yeah.
I rewatched episode 1 and 2 because, like you said, this is a mini season. It's only 5 episodes, so I was able to watch all 5 in quick succession. And I think this episode is the first time we hear Mikey say cowabunga, which obviously became his catchphrase and was on T-shirts and in video games and everything. So we get introduced to Baxter Stockman, and he is performing a science experiment with his mousers in a maze. The mousers are programmed to catch the rat in the maze, and of course, this catches Shredder's attention. And Shredder wants to use the mousers and on more of a grand scale to find the big rat, Splinter. As we know from the first 2 episodes, Shredder and Splinter are enemies dating back to Japan, and Shredder set up Splinter, and that's why it made Splinter look like he was going to attack his sensei, and that's why Splinter had to flee Japan and come to America. I keep saying Splinter, but you know, I mean, Amato Yoshi, which was his name, as before he transformed into a humanoid rat. So yeah, we get introduced to Baxter. Shredder wants to use the mousers to catch Splinter, and I love Kermit in this episode. He's so mad. He's so pissed off at Shredder, because Shredder is producing these mousers instead of finding a body for Krang. And Krang's just like going off, like, "Why are you messing with this? Where's my body? You told me you were going to make my body."
That's a very good impression. I like that.
Thanks, man. I love me some Krang. He's so great.
Oh yeah.
So we cut back to Splinter. He's awakening in the turtle's lair down there in the sewer. And April is still with him, and she says she has to leave because she hasn't even been home after meeting the Turtles in episode 1. She's been with them the whole time. She has to get home and get back to work. And after she leaves, the Mousers actually locate Splinter, and they bust through the wall and find Splinter, and it looks like he's cornered. And, of course, our boys, the Turtles, arrive and save the day. We see April back in her apartment, and she's getting out of the shower, and I think she's either wearing a towel or a robe. And when I was a kid, I remember being like, "Oh, that April chick, she's kind of cute." Oh, wouldn't mind knowing her.
Yeah, I had the same reaction. Yeah, back in the day. Yeah.
And it's funny when the Turtles go to her apartment, Mikey opens her refrigerator and the entire thing is stocked with instant pizza. Like, top to bottom, that's all this woman has is pizza. No drinks, no condiments, no sandwich meat. So Mikey is obviously super stoked about this. And the turtles kind of go wild in her apartment and proceed to basically turn it upside down within the span of about 2 minutes. Raph fills up the bubble bath. The instructions say to use a cap full of bubble bath, and he sees a hat hanging on the rack in her.
Oh, a cap, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, oh, a cap full. So he fills up the bubble bath, and all the water comes rushing out. And another thing that I notice is that in 1987, April possessed the height of technology, a dot matrix printer.
Yeah.
And at this point, he has constructed an entire army of mousers. The first group that he sent after Splinter was only a dozen mousers, but then he says he's going to create 1,200. And, yeah, while I'm talking about Shredder, you know, when I was a kid, none of us knew who James Avery was. We didn't know that he would go on to become Uncle Phil on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but rewatching the episodes as an adult, it's just so great to hear his voice and to hear how much, like, love he puts into this.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's awesome, yeah, but it's weird at the same time, because, like, my adult brain is hearing Uncle Phil. My child brain is hearing you know, Shredder, and they're kind of at war with each other. I'm supposed to love this guy because he's Uncle Phil, but I'm supposed to hate him because he's Shredder. It's a very difficult difficult scenario, but it's awesome because, like you said, he goes full out, and it's like full on maniacal, world dominating kind of villainry. At its best. He plays it up to its fullest. And it just shows you how much range he had as an actor to be able to go do that. And then be able to be some, you know, calming, fatherly kind of character on Fresh Prince. It's a really a testament to his talent that he had.
Oh, 100%, man. I mean, obviously, rest in peace, James Avery, but for him to be able to go between those two different worlds, to be able to do this on this cartoon and portray the Uncle Phil role, and they even overlapped for about a year, I believe. Yeah. So he was doing both at the same time, so you're right. That really does speak to his talent as a performer. I mean, the guy was just great.
I wonder if some of the outtakes he accidentally said, and started screaming at Will in the Shredder voice. That would have been kind of funny if he kind of messed up. And that would have been an outtake I'd wanna see just for fun.
It'd be cool to see Shredder throw one of the turtles out of a door, kind of like Jazz.
Yeah, exactly. That was funny. And it's funny you brought up April's apartment and the chaos that ensues. It's different than the movie, but there's an equal amount of chaos that occurs at her apartment at the hands of the turtles.
That's so true.
I feel like, you know, while they put their own spin on it, the movie definitely borrowed from the animated series in certain aspects. And then, like I said, just put their own take on it.
Yeah, I think the film is the original film, I think, is just a perfect blending of the comic book sensibilities with some things that people were familiar with from the film, such as the scene in April's apartment, obviously the turtles having different colored masks so you could tell them apart instead of all wearing the same color mask in the comic. So I think the movie borrows what it needs from both and does so brilliantly.
Yeah, sure.
But after Shredder sends the army of mousers after the turtles, he also sends the Foot Clan after Baxter because he has what he wants. He has been able to produce the mousers on a grand scale, so he tells the the foot to go take care of Baxter, and then the turtles have to arrive and save him from the Foot Clan. So they've already saved Splinter earlier in the episode, and now they're putting on their hero hats again and saving Baxter. I love when Baxter won't tell them where Shredder is, and Raph holds up his side to his face and says, "You better, or I'm gonna get sarcastic." And Baxter is like, okay, I'll tell you whatever you want to know. And then in order to go look for Shredder, the turtles commandeer Baxter's van, which we know later in the series will no longer be Baxter's van, but it will become the turtle van. The turtles arrive and save April and Splinter from the Mousers, and the episode ends basically with Krang saving Michelangelo and telling him where to find the master control to shut down the Mousers, because Krang is all about scuttlebutting Shredder's plan because he just wants his damn body. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much where the episode leaves us to roll into episode 4.
Yeah,
man, this is just, it's such a fun cartoon, man. I hope, you know, I have kids and I don't really watch most of their shows with them. While they're watching their shows, I'm doing something different. But sure, I hope the kids of today have as much fun watching something as I had watching this series.
Oh, yeah. It's just really such a fun and entertaining show. It's got all the action. It's got the, you know, the martial arts, the humor. But I think at its core, you know, it's a show about, it's the message is family. And I think that's a really important message. You know, the Fast and the Furious likes to talk about itself being about family, but the Turtles did it first. But why don't we rate each episode individually? So what would you give this episode?
I mean, if I'm giving out a grade, like a letter grade on it, sure, I've got to give it an A, man. We have the Shredder and Krang beef. We've got the introduction of Baxter Stockman, who goes on to play a larger role later on in the series. We have, you know, April and Splinter. I mean, it's got all the elements that you could want, man.
Yeah, I agree. I really had some fun with this episode, and really nothing sort of, you know, what was off or you know, disappointed me in it. So I got to give it the same grade. So it's an A for me. It sets up the Mousers. It introduces Baxter Stockman to the series. It puts the turtles in a little bit of a peril because they temporarily are driven out of their lair, their abode. So yeah, it's got a pretty much everything going for it. So I'll echo your A. So moving on to episode 4, which is called Hot Rotting Teenagers from Dimension X. Shredder opens the portal to Dimension X for the first time. Three teenage kids known as Neutrinos and two of Krang's Stone Warriors emerge. The turtles befriend the teens, but before long, the two Stone Warriors set up a special weather-making device that causes trouble. So, in this episode, it's the first appearance of the Neutrinos. The characters are specifically Kayla, Dask, and Zach, and then we have General Trag, and it's also the first appearance of the Turtle Van.
Yes, sir.
So, Chris, what were your thoughts on this episode?
This has always been one of my very favorite episodes from the original series. It's the first time that we get to see Dimension X. Like you just mentioned, it's the first time that we see the Turtle Van in all its glory. And I've always just been a huge fan of the Neutrinos. I mean, in the 80s, you know, when this episode premiered, they had that sort of 50s vibe where things were square and calling people daddy-o. But I guess watching it in 2020, they give off more of like a hipster vibe, you know, like that's kind of what I get from them. They'd be like hipsters that still think they're teenagers, but oh man, I love the Neutrinos. They're so great.
You're right. It did feel kind of like a, when they were talking, I'm like, this doesn't even sound like late 80s. Something's off, something's going on here. But yeah, it kind of echoed that, like, especially with their hairstyles, right?
Oh yeah, their hairstyles, yeah. The crazy glasses, the different lingo. Even their cars looked like souped up like hot rods, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's a good call from you with the 50s inspiration there. Funny thing about this is that I think I've had forgot. It's been a while since I've gone back and watched the original series, and I guess I had forgotten that the neutrinos had been introduced this early on, because I remember reading, more recent issues of the current IDW comic where the neutrinos were introduced again, and a lot of it is, there are a lot of similarities between the two, but I remember when I was reading, that group felt familiar to me before, but I couldn't place where I had been introduced to them. And then sure enough, when I was watching this, I'm like, okay, this is the incarnation that I saw them for the first time. So it was kind of weird that I kind of rediscovered that, if you will. The only major difference that I saw from the way this animated series sort of introduces them and the way the comic introduces them is that I believe Kayla is in the comic is like the princess of that group, and Michelangelo like falls head over heels for her. You can kind of see it in the cartoon, but it's more evident in the comic, and so those were like some subtle differences that I noticed, but otherwise, you know, it was pretty much kept intact. And like I've commented on past episodes, the fact that not very many changes occur from when these characters were first introduced to their more modern incarnation speaks to the quality of the characters and the mythology being created.
Oh yeah, man. These first four or five episodes in this first season really did lay a lot of groundwork for characters and themes that would go on to be mainstays in Ninja Turtles lore for decades to come. I mean, they really were swinging for the fences with these first few episodes, and a lot of those ideas stuck.
Yeah. Is there anything else about the episode you wanted to call out? Do you wanted to?
Yeah. Well, like you said, this is the first time that we see the turtle van in all its glory, because in the very beginning of the episode, they decided to take Baxter's van to fit it with some new technology. It already had some things that they called out in the last episode that made them think the van was cool. So they take the van to kind of retrofit it, and Krang tells Shredder he's not getting any more tech until Krang gets his body. Like, this dude he's had it. He's fed up. He wants that damn body. And this is the episode when we learn that Krang is from Dimension X, obviously from the title, Hot Rodding Teenagers from Dimension X. And Krang wants Shredder to open the portal so that he can bring his stone warriors to Earth to defeat the Turtles. So when the portal is opened, the Stone Warriors do come, but they're chasing the Neutrinos who came through the portal first. And, I mean, watching this episode, I'm 39 years old, and I was just smiling like a little kid again when those Neutrinos popped through the portal, man. Like, I love those guys.
Yeah, cool.
One thing that kind of stood out to me is that there is a facsimile of the World Trade Center in this episode, but they refer to it as the Global Trade Center.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if they weren't allowed to use like a real location, but you see the Twin Towers, which now, 19 years later, it's still kind of striking to see,
yeah.
in cartoon form, especially. We learned that Krang lost his body when he was banished to Earth, so that's why he is just a talking brain now, which I'm trying to think to myself, like, okay, you lost your body, but how did you get eyes and a mouth on your damn brain just because you lost your body? But, you know, it's comics, it's cartoons.
Suspension of disbelief at some point.
Yeah, we don't really have to worry too much about that, but when he gave that line about losing his body, I was like, well, when did the rest of this craziness occur? The Turtles take the neutrinos to an arcade, which I'm sure was a lot of fun. And I actually saw an arcade yesterday that I wanted to go in and play some games. But then I was thinking, wait, man, coronavirus. People have probably touched all these video games and stuff. So I walked right by the arcade and didn't go in.
My suggestion would probably wait till there's a vaccine and then go play that game. Is my idea. Then go back, yep. And if it's still there, then feel free to play it. But until then, you probably made the right decision.
Yeah, I was concerned that my mask wouldn't give me adequate protection there. But, arcades were huge in the 80s. I used to go almost every weekend. So, of course, it would make sense that the Turtles would take their new teenage buddies, the Neutrinos, to go hang out in an arcade. I love that the Stone Warriors have a weather satellite. Not only do they have a weather satellite, but there's a setting on it called Total Chaos. Like, who created this thing, man? Like, that's an actual setting on the weather satellite, Total Chaos. Is, like,
got right to the point. Like, there's no beating around the bush.
The Neutrinos tell the Turtles that Krang is the supreme warlord of Dimension X. So we know that Dimension X is basically a big war, and that's what the Neutrinos are trying to escape. That's why the Stone Warriors are after the Neutrinos, because the Neutrinos just want to hang out and be cool and have a good time and not be involved in war, which, yeah, I'm right on with that line of thinking.
I think it's funny because you mentioned, you know, seeing the World Trade Center and how that sort of impacts today, and that unfortunately it's no longer, or they're no longer here in the world, so that is impactful. But also, you know, kids just wanted to be kids getting away from war. I think that is it seems to be, unfortunately, an everlasting sentiment, because we're always kind of in the middle of a threat of war, it seems. Or now, you know, with this chaos that we're going through. So, you know, the sentiment of kids just wanting to be kids is very poignant, you know, 20-some years later. So,
yeah, man, every generation has their own stories like that, you know. I guess, like, in the 50s, which is when it seems like the Neutrinos were kind of based around, we had Korea, you know. Later on, a decade or two after that, we have Vietnam, and then the Cold War, and obviously 9/11, the War on Terror. So you're right. Every generation, unfortunately, has these same experiences, it seems like. That's one thing that always endeared that was always endearing to me about the Neutrinos, that they weren't trying to be on anyone's side. They weren't trying to be in any big battle. They were just trying to hang out, man.
Yeah. And that's another difference where, the show and the comic, in the sense that in the comic, they have to go back and fight, and we actually get to see some of the fighting in the comic. We actually get to see some of the war, because the Turtles go there and help out a little bit, and so you get to see some of that war unfold in the book. But I just want to touch on the van. I mean, it really shows you, like, you really get a sense of Donatello's, you know, intelligence and ingenuity as he's going about that van. Like, you know, all the stuff he tricks it out with, and just seeing him in the lab, you could tell he feels at home there.
Yeah, I think this is the first time we really see Donnie, like, kind of getting involved with all the tech, right? Like, this is sort of the jump off point for him being the technical guy, like we learned in the you know, in the theme song to the show, Donatello does machines, and he does this one very well.
Yeah.
Man, this show did such a great job of being an advertisement for the toys, because I was so ecstatic when I got that turtle van for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. I had that van as well, and I loved it. I had all the turtles. I had Splinter. I had Shredder. I had a couple of the foot soldiers as well. So that van was a big thing in my household when I was younger. I wish I still had it. But, yeah. Things happen. Your toys get given away.
Unfortunately.
And the other thing I found hilarious was when he's in the lab and he's got the, you know, the visor down, right, as he's you know, working away. And I guess Baxter Stockman's one of the personnel that, I guess it was a cleaning person, comes in and she's like, oh, I'm just going to clean while you're in here. You'll barely notice me. And then
he's
trying to get rid of her. He basically tells her, can you come back later? She insists. So he lifts up his visor, thinking his actual true form will scare the crap out of her. And she's just like, oh, Dr. Stockman, you're working too hard. You know, maybe you look a little green. You should take a break.
Yeah.
And I'm like, lady, how do you not tell that that's a, you know, an oversized turtle? Like, how does that not register with you for you? Like, what kind of crazy crap have you seen in New York that you would just casually think, oh, yeah, that's normal?
I guess it's the same way they wear trench coats and a hat, and no one seems to think anything of it, you know?
Yeah, it's
kind of, I remember seeing that in the episode. I'm like, yeah, you look a little green. Oh, yeah, and the big nose and the bandana and the shell, none of that seems odd.
It's pretty funny. But anything else you want to touch on before we rate this one?
Just, you know, at the end, I really loved how April is kind of like tucking them into bed, and she's reading them the story of the tortoise and the hare, which is obviously very appropriate for this show.
Right, and it's funny because it's like, I think it's like a real kind of, you get a real sense of, you know, there are certain moments where you get a sense of Raphael's softer side. You know, like, he's very more rugged and with attitude and all that, and all that jazz. But there are a few moments, I think, where that softer side, that, you know, that he's still a teenager, he's still, you know, he doesn't have much worldly experience with the outside world. You kind of get that sense, and that's what, this is one of the places where you get that. I love how she's become like sort of like a friend to them, but also like a kind of, same way, like a surrogate mother to them.
Yep. Yeah, isn't Raph the one that asks her to read the story one more time? And she's like, but I've already read it 5 times.
Yeah. Yeah, so I kind of like that as well. It was a nice touch. For me, I really enjoyed this episode. So with that in mind, what would you rate this episode?
Well, this episode is an A+, 5 neutrinos, Daddy-O.
Yeah, it's really good. They throw a lot at you in terms of content and story and sort of, you know, exposition with trying to explain a bit about Dimension X and stuff. But it never feels overwhelming or like it's too much. There's just the right amount, and with a show that's geared to kids, you really have to have that. You really have to have that balance, because if you don't, you're gonna bore them with too much explanation. But they do it in a way where they infuse the action and stuff like that. It really keeps your attention. So well done, and a cool set of characters, cool concept, and it was our first appearance of that great toy that I once had. So all that being said, it's an A+ on my end as well.
All right, we're 2 for 2.
Yeah, so we're gelling pretty good here in terms of our opinions, so it's good. Not that we have to agree all the time. There will be times when we disagree, I'm sure, but it's cool. But while we're on this good roll, let's go right into episode 5, which is Shredder and Splinter. Shredder transmits a message to the Turtles, showing off a retro mutagen gun that could turn Splinter back into a human. When Splinter goes after the gun, Shredder then has completed Krang's new body and puts him in it. Then, after the Turtles come to help Splinter, they have to deal with Krang and his new body. Then, after the Turtles defeat Krang and Splinter, destroys the retro mutagen gun to save the Turtles, Shredder and Krang try to open the portal again. Donatello reverses the polarity, causing the entire Technodrome to be pulled into Dimension X. This is the first appearance of Krang's android body, as well as the turtle blimp.
So, yep, and the first appearance of the turtle communicator as well, when they give one to April so she can keep in touch with them.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah.
So, this episode, in keeping with the serialized nature of the show, it opens up with a TV news report showing the tornado from the previous episode that was caused by the total chaos setting on the weather satellites. Like I just mentioned, we have the first instance of the turtle communicator, which obviously they use to much effect throughout the series. Like you said, we've got the turtle blimp making its first appearance, and that was a fun toy to play with as a 6-year-old, my friend. I loved that blimp. This episode really does focus on family a lot, because Shredder has the retro mutagen ray generator, and he tells the turtles that it is the only thing that can turn Splinter back into a human, because it reverses the mutation effects. Which he demonstrates for them, and, you know, he tells them this is the only way Splinter is going to become a human again. But the turtles are worried that Shredder will use the gun to turn them back into regular turtles. So it's kind of a catch-22, you know. They want to get it so they can help Splinter, but they don't want it to be used on them because they're enjoying being teenage humanoids. What I thought was kind of funny was that the neutrino car breaks down, and they say that, they're looking for the fuel source for it. And Donatello says that it runs on plutonium, which obviously it's the 1980s. This is coming on the heels of Back to the Future. So, of course, every futuristic car runs on plutonium. Now, thankfully, there were no Iranian terrorists for them to steal the plutonium from, because that could have taken things badly. But yeah, like you said, this is the first appearance of Krang's android body. So Shredder has completed the body for Krang. One thing, this just shows the time frame of the episode. Wrath, when he's trying to work the controls, he says, "How do you work this oversized ghetto blaster?" And that is a term I have not heard for 20 to 30 years.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
This is definitely an 80s TV show.
Right.
It's funny when April's trying to leave her, Channel 6 to go help the turtles. One of her coworkers she tells her coworker that the turtles are trying to save them from an alien invasion. And he says, "Well, if you only had some proof." And she opens the back of the turtle van, and he goes, "Well, that's good enough for me." I'm like, what did you see in the back of the turtle van that convinced you that these guys are trying to save the world from alien domination? But she just flings open the doors, and he goes, "That's good enough for me." And I'm like, all right, buddy. Well, I'm glad you're on board then. We have, in the middle of the episode, Splinter is trying to take down Shredder, and Shredder has somehow, I guess it's, he's created like holograms of himself, because there are like multiple Shredders that Splinter is trying to deal with. From his humanoid body, Krang contacts his soldiers in Dimension X and lets them know that he's ready to open the portal so they can come back and wipe out the turtles for him. When the turtles show up on the scene, Krang busts out of the Technodrome, and we learn that he can manipulate his body, and he grows to almost the size of the Technodrome. Like, this is a big Krang that they're dealing with.
Kind of felt like the third act of a Power Ranger episode.
Yeah.
Where, you know, at the end, Rita sort of makes her monster grow, and then the Power Rangers have to use the Megazord to take it down. But yeah, it reminded me of that. And since I'm a fan of that franchise too, it didn't bother me one bit.
You know what it reminded me of? I recently watched the Beastie Boys documentary on Apple TV Plus, and it reminded me of the Intergalactic video, where it's made to look like a cheesy, like 80s kind of Japanese Godzilla sort of film with the large monster walking through the city and wrecking things. That's the first image that popped into my mind when Krang grew in size. I was like, oh, this is like a Beastie Boys video.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Donatello creates the turtle blimp. So it's the first time we see that in action.
It's another toy I had, by the way.
Oh, yeah, me too, man. That was so much fun. Shredder utters one of my favorite lines from this series, and one that I always used when I was playing with my action figures. He says, "Tonight I dine on turtle soup."
Yeah. And
yeah, I don't think my Shredder is as good as my Krang, but
yeah, it needs a little work, but we can work on it. Let's have to work on it. Yeah,
that's one that I always used to say when I was playing with my toys. Tonight I dine on turtle soup. And, you know, to go back to what you said earlier in the episode about this show really being about family, Splinter shows that more than anything in this episode when he destroys the mutagen ray gun. He knows that this has wiped away his hope of returning back to a human, but he is saving his sons from being turned back into the turtle pets that they once were. So that just shows Splinter's love for his sons, that he was willing to, you know, give up his dream in order to protect them and save them. Donnie's able to reverse the pull of the portal, which pulls the Technodrome and Shredder and Krang back into Dimension X. And at the end of the episode, April finally goes live with her exclusive and claims that the turtles are not some kind of monsters, but the saviors of the city.
Now, it was brought up that, you know, they want to get that retro mutagen gun to sort of be able to change Splinter back into a human. Why do you think, because I don't remember being outright stated as to why Splinter wanted to go back to being human at that point, before, you know, the events of the episode unfolded.
Well, I don't know that it's explicitly laid out, but I got to think that if I were turned into a giant rat, I might want to go back to being myself.
Yeah, I guess, that's true. But also, it's weird because in my head I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't the turtles want to go back to being human? But then I remember, actually, they never were, so they wouldn't. All they know is, you know, it would be an animal that, you know, doesn't have the same sort of intelligence or ancestry. So it's a lot more of a crappy sort of hand that they'd be dealt had they been turned back. So it makes sense. But you almost, because they're humanoid, you kind of, when you're watching, you kind of get lost in it. Like, well, what would they want to go back to being human too? And then you're like, oh, wait, they wouldn't be. So you kind of, or at least I kind of forgot. I'm like, oh, yeah, they wouldn't be human. That's right. So now it does make sense. But and you know what it was? I was getting confused with the comic, because you know how in the comic it has the reincarnation, how they were once boys in Japan, during that. So I was getting the two continuities kind of mixed up when I was watching, and that's what happened there for me a bit there. But
well, yeah, if they were turned back into regular turtles, then Mikey couldn't enjoy his pepperoni pizza and ice cream pizza anymore.
Yeah, which I don't, look, I like both pepperoni and ice cream, but I I don't know if that's a combo that I'm willing to get behind. And I really liked in this episode April's kind of determination, forcefulness, and like the ingenuity that she uses to sort of trick her boss into giving her a crew to go file her report. And I think it's a really strong episode in that sense from her, right? Because she'll do whatever it takes to get the story. Where sometimes in a couple of episodes she comes off a little bit, you know, not 100%, but slightly damsel in distress.
Right.
Kind of scenario. So this was a much stronger showing for her, and I like that. And yeah, that blimp is awesome.
Yeah, and it shows the close relationship that she's developed with the Turtles so quickly. You know, we're five episodes in, which these five episodes have transpired over the course of a few days, maybe a week at the most. And she's already like a part of their family. So we have the father and son dynamic, and then we have the sort of either big sister or adoptive mother sort of dynamic as well. And they've fully established that within five episodes, which is, you know, very commendable.
Yeah, they really get a lot of story in a 22-minute episode or 21-minute, whatever it ends up being.
For sure. There's not a lot of filler, man. Not a lot of dead time.
It's really impressive how much they pack into such a short space of time. Anything else you want to mention before we rate these ones?
No, I think that about covers it for me on this episode, man. It's a good way to leave the season. It leaves you with a little cliffhanger of Shredder and Krang being back in Dimension X, and Shredder's like, I don't want to be in Dimension X. I want to take over Earth.
Yeah, and it's funny how Krang, he's like, oh, we're in my turf now. I'm in control. But I'm like, you were kind of already in control throughout this whole time. Like, you were still ordering him around.
Yeah, but now he has his body.
Right,
so,
exactly. Yeah.
But Shredder has to listen to him.
But Shredder was still, you know, at his beck and call. Whenever he'd call, Shredder would go and, you know, entertain his conversation, right? So he kind of had control before. Now he just has a body to go along with it, and he's got the control of everybody else. Where at least on Earth, Shredder had some allies that could, you know,
push comes to shove. Shredder's got no Foot Clan now.
Yeah, so we'll see. It'll be fun to revisit season two and see where things go from here, because the memory is a little hazy. Like I said, it's been a while since I've revisited this iteration, so it'll be fun to go through it again, just like it has been up to this point. But with that being said, what would you rate this final episode of season one of such a classic animated series?
Oh, solid A for me, man. We get the turtle blimp, the turtle communicator. We get Krang's body. We get the family feels that are being established so early on. And we get a nice cliffhanger to draw you into season two. So really not a whole lot to dislike about this episode. Solid A.
And I really liked, above everything else you said, I don't want to regurgitate what you said, but, you know, we really do get a sort of a resolution between Splinter and Shredder, as at least to what they've built so far.
Yep.
And I really appreciated that they didn't, in the midst of everything else going on, that they didn't forget about that. Because, you know, some shows today, even live action, will drop plot lines and almost as if they forget about them. So I really like that we got a temporary sort of resolution, at least. But yeah, no complaints at all. They introduced two new items that would eventually become toys of mine. So that's always a plus. And again, I can't disagree with you. So it's an A for me as well. Great stuff. A great first season. And, you know, selfishly, I wish it was longer. But we have many more seasons to cover, so I'm okay.
Oh, yeah, the longer ones are coming up.
Yeah, so we'll have a lot to look forward to. But, Chris, this was a fun first episode. I you fit right in with the group and with my other co-hosts. I had a lot of fun and love the perspective that you bring about not only being a long-term fan, but also having the pleasure of introducing your kids to this stuff as well. So that'll be a cool little wrinkle and a cool little anecdote that we have. So you'll have to keep us posted on how your little ones are enjoying this as they, if they watch with you and when they watch with you, and you can keep us posted on that. But this was a lot of fun. In between episodes, if our listeners want to get in touch with you and talk turtles, where can they do that?
Well, you can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Chris N. Harrelson, or you can search for Commodore Schmidlap, which is like my screen name that I use because I'm a big fan of the 66 Batman movie. But yeah, I'm on Twitter pretty active. I'm there almost every day, so hit me up there. Let's talk some turtles.
Awesome. And good call being a fan of the 66 Batman show. You can never go wrong with that.
Oh, that's great.
If you want to talk to me about Turtles, Batman 66, or any other podcast that I host on this this network, you can do that on Twitter at Adam_LeafsFan. Or you can, if Facebook is more your thing, we have a Facebook group. It's the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network. We have a group, so if you go there, you will be able to request admittance into the group, and then myself or one of my co-hosts will add you to the group and we can continue the conversation there. In the meantime, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope that you enjoyed and watched along with us. Just so you know, get ready for season two because we will be covering that. So if you want to follow along for our next review, it'll be at the very minimum the first episode, if not the first two, of season two. So watch those in the interim. But we hope you had fun because we have fun bringing these to you every time we do. And until next time, remember that whenever you're stressed, whenever you're feeling uncertain, have a pizza. And shout the words Kawabunga. And until then, remember that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are forever, from the first pizza slice to the last. So long, everybody.
Hey, what do you guys want to eat?
Pizza!
Kawabunga, dude.
Go!